Hello and welcome to the Penn Innovators and Business Series. Thank you so much for coming, Joey.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled. I love supporting the community.
So this interview is with Joey Zwillinger. Joey is a Wharton MBA with a background in biotech engineering and renewable materials. In 2015, he helped co-found Allbirds with his partner, Tim Brown. And since its founding, Allbirds has gone to design what Time Magazine has called the world's most comfortable shoe. It has been worn by Barack Obama, Leonardo DiCaprio, and many, many others. But even more fascinating is Allbirds' no-compromise mentality, developing shoes that are sustainable and eco-friendly. Allbirds is a B Corp certified organization and is carbon neutral, creating their shoes with natural materials such as wool and eucalyptus trees. This entire interview is dedicated to raising awareness for Styles Hall, an organization helping low-income, youth of color students succeed and excel in the educational pipeline. Please check out their work at www.styleshall.org. Thank you so much for joining, Joey. What inspired you to work with Styles Hall?
Good luck, like everything. So I was 20 years old. I was at University of California, Berkeley. I played soccer for the school and I got a knee injury and that was the good luck. And my knee injury led me to look for something else to pursue while I was at school. And fortunately, I got the opportunity to be a coordinator and lead a program of about 40 college kids to go up and on rotation, lead an after-school program called Sports for Kids with the student population, elementary school. And it was a student population from a lower socioeconomic background and really lacked some mentorship. And the after-school program put like such great infrastructure for these kids. And what I found was, wow, could one person make a big difference? And two, I felt like I was getting just like as much or more out of the experience than the kids themselves, and realizing how good it is to give back to a meaningful cause. And so since that time, I led that program for about 3 years throughout my rest of my college, which took me a little longer than probably a lot of you guys. It took me 4.5 years. And I subsequently joined the board. I've been on the board ever since for about almost 20 years, which is a bit scary to say. And now I'm actually going to be a founding board member of a new organization that's going to spin out of that, which is targeted towards bringing the rich, talented pipeline, particularly of Black young professionals, into the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And I'm really excited for that. More to come. And we're treating it like a startup. It's going to be fun. And I invite a lot of you to stay tuned on that and join us.
So when you were 21 years old, what were you working on? What were you doing?
Yeah, it's hard to even take back that far. But so I grew up with two parents that were psychologists, both professors. And I had no business mentorship. So I had no idea what was going on in the world of business. And when I was 21, I did my first internship, and that was at a place called Goldman Sachs. And some of you may have heard of it. I hadn't at the time. When I was 21, I walked into a cafe and I said, I love the idea of business, but I don't know what it is. I love psychology because that's what I knew growing up. And so what's the blend of that? It sounds like HR, and it sounds like that's what runs business. People run business. HR has got to run the business. So I joined HR at Goldman Sachs as an intern and had an incredible experience professionally, learned a ton, learned what business is, learned what HR does in some aspects, a little bit of it. And I actually joined a group called the Global Leadership and Diversity Team. So that was something I was passionate about from early on, as you can hear from my support of Styles Hall and whatnot. And beyond that, I was, you know, just finished playing soccer, got into the more casual form. I was an engineer at Berkeley, and I vibed on a few alcoholic beverages once it became appropriate, as you pointedly chose the year of 21 to pick.
Yes, I see. Why Goldman Sachs? Is there a reason you wanted to work in a big bank and in a large institution?
No, I'm not at all. I honestly didn't. I had no idea what banks even did at the time. It sounded like two Jewish guys, and I was Jewish, and I am Jewish. So I was like, all right, they'll probably take care of me. And it turned out there was 20,000 people there, and it was a larger institution, and there was a lot more diversity than just two Jewish men. So it was an amazing experience, but honestly, I had no idea what I was getting into. And I think, you know, look, I know that a lot of you guys are embarking on early parts of your career. You're probably a lot more methodical and thoughtful about it than I was at the time. which is great. But I will say the one thing I took to this is that no matter what I was doing in the early phase of my career, I was constantly looking for opportunity, no matter how boring an assignment was or a project once I was in consulting or anything that I was experiencing, that I learned something from everything. And I had an intellectual curiosity that I brought, and that to every job that I did. And that found me in situations where I was after college doing deals for a waste, solid waste company, a trash company. I was doing deals in landfills, and there were huge multi-million-dollar deals. And I was like a 22-year-old, and I did it for like 11 months, not specifically all those little deals in landfills, but I was interacting with a wide range of people, taking so much richness out of an experience that others would have found very tedious or stinky, quite literally. And I grew so much as a result of that attitude. And I think I was rewarded so well by people wanting to work with me and then drawing me into things that I then started to be able to select. And so that was really the early phase of my career, I think, can be summed up with that, just learning what business was before I really latched on to my entrepreneurial passion and latched on to the idea of how the private sector could make a really significant impact in the world and what I wanted to do with that. So this is the early stage of me just learning. And I had to do a lot of my learning after college because I didn't know what I didn't know yet. I guess what I take from that is be self-aware. If you don't have a passion that you really authentically believe in, go and learn and keep learning and keep an open mind. And as you're keeping an open mind, you're going to find opportunities that you gravitate towards. And when you do find something that you feel passionate about and you feel like it's something that has a long horizon to it and that you could be happy and feel fulfilled for decades doing and working in that environment, then you go and you drive hard and you go get that. But until you know that, in some of this, if somebody tells you it's perfect, they know from the get-go, this is what they want to do and they never look back, I think they're lying. I think you got to manufacture some of this. You have to find something. You have to convince yourself sometimes to believe in yourself and also believe in the opportunity. And once you do, I think then the journey starts to become extremely fulfilling. And that is what I've found since I gravitated towards using the private sector for improving the environment. And that's been my passion since just a few years after what I just described, really from when I was about 25, 26 up until now. And that's taken me on quite an adventure.
That's so interesting. So from soccer to working on these very interesting, diverse jobs, from corporate jobs to working at a landfill, this led you to a Wharton MBA. And then you came out of it a few years later with Allbirds. So tell us a little bit about what Allbirds is in your words.
Sure. Let me give you a little history before I even tell you what Allbirds is. So I went to Wharton and had a wonderful experience and met some of my best friends in the world that are now my closest colleagues and partners and board members and, you name it. And so it's been that was a transformative and really wonderful experience for me. But I came to believe that before going to Wharton, that climate change in particular was the issue of our species. It would be the most important thing of our generation. It would be the most important thing for my kids and for my grandkids. And so if I was going to spend my life fighting for something, that was a cause worthy of fighting for. And just given my kind of upbringing and going to the outdoors, it was something that felt natural to me. And so how would I go about doing that? Was I going to be a lawyer, a politician, that kind of thing? It sounded boring and I didn't want to do it. And I realized that the intersection of business and policy was important, but that I would thrive in a business environment and that using the private sector to drive significant change in the fight against climate change was something that was really possible. And so when I was at school, I used the filter of looking at opportunities that would help me achieve that, use an entrepreneurial environment to make a big, big change. My personal mantra, my personal ohm is that the individual has the opportunity with a little bit of creative juice and a little bit of passion, you can create so much change in the world as just a single individual. And that has driven everything I've done in my life, from my hobbies to my business to my family and how we do stuff. So I joined a company called Solazyme, and we engineered microorganisms to replace petrochemicals and fuels, so biofuels. And we did it with microalgae. And I ended up leading the chemicals division to replace the whole world's petrochemicals was our ambition, and do so with a tiny little unicellular organism. And what I found was that consumers really wanted the solution that we had, and the solution existed. When I went out to the industry and tried to sell our products into different brands or different industrial companies, the answer was always amazing. That sounds awesome. And then when it came time to make a purchase, the answer was typically no. And the typical reason was, can you just do what we do now and do it cheaper? Because that would be ideal. And what I realized is that consumers want this, the technology exists, and these brands are the gateway. So how can I go, and maybe I'm not replacing as much fuel or chemicals on a mass basis, but how can we use storytelling and emotional purchases to create a brand that goes downstream and captures what consumers want in a product? And I believe more than ever today that consumers want product that doesn't compromise on performance or comfort or whatever the attribute they're looking for that product to do without extracting something from the world. And why can't a company be more like a tree that gives back more than it takes from the planet? It absolutely can. The technology all exists to do it. And we just need some willpower and innovation focus there to do that. So Tim came around this time as I'm getting this frustrating sense at Solazyme. And Tim is a professional soccer player. He's got a design background. He's been tweaking around with some shoes, one in particular, because he's from New Zealand, made out of wool. He's looking out the window and he's like, 30 million sheep, got to do something with this. Let's put a shoe. Mm-hmm. We looked at the industry and it turns out 20 billion pairs of shoes are made every year. The average American buys 8 pairs of shoes per year. That's 2.5 billion pairs of shoes just in America. $80 billion industry. I mean, I can give you more statistics. It is enormous. Mm-hmm. And the companies that are in there are all wholesale driven. They're driven all around. They're motivated all by cost and speed. And they were paying lip service to the environment. And what it spoke to me was that there was a leadership opportunity. And if we could connect an interesting business strategy with an opportunity to lead on an environmentally sensitive product that drove amazing performance, we had a really compelling opportunity for people. And why not take a shot at that with my career? And so Tim, being the husband of my wife's best friend from college, they were roommates at Dartmouth together, my wife and his wife. I knew that he was a good man because I knew her and she was a great woman. And my wife loved her. And so what could go wrong? So we decided to be co-CEOs and we started Allbirds to make shoes and do so with powered by naturally derived sustainable materials that felt better and looked better and did that because they were sustainable. And what we've now would articulate is that we still believe consumers want great products, not sustainable ones, but that truly great products are sustainable. And we believe that more than ever today. And so we have gone on a journey to create a brand, not just but where we're getting into apparel. We have socks and underwear to start here, more to come, made out of the most sustainable and natural products. And we create wonderful experiences. And in doing so, we create a really interesting business opportunity. And we hope that what we've done with our business is that if people buy more stuff from us, the world is better off. That is our goal. And if we can continue to align our financial motivations for our shareholders with the incentives for the world, the environment as a stakeholder, of course, we took a pretty comprehensive view that includes our employees and lots of other stakeholders in that we all win. And that's a great model. And so that's Allbirds in a nutshell. We make the Wool Runner. We have some everyday sneakers like the Wool Runner and the Tree Runner. We have a running shoe called the Tree Dasher made out of eucalyptus fiber. We've made soles out of sugar cane, which is a first of the world invention, which is truly incredible and actually utilizes a carbon negative material, which, by the way, just like a tree, spits out more and sucks more carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere than it takes to create. So stuff we're really proud of and now continuing to roll with.
So actually, I have a shoe right here.
There you go.
Breakdown of what's in this shoe.
Sure. So that's a Wool Runner. And the upper is made out of a super fine merino wool from New Zealand. And it feels like cashmere. You can attest to it, Christopher. The insole is made from a castor bean oil, which means it's a vegetable oil that's been translated into a super soft and cushy insole. The bottom unit is made from sugar cane, and the laces are made from a recycled plastic bottle, about I think it's a liter bottle per pair of shoes. Have been recycled to make those laces. So we think it's one of the lowest carbon footprint shoes on the planet. And by the way, it also, as you noted, some people think it's extremely comfortable. Hopefully you think it's chic and good looking, and we've had some great people wear it.
Is the shoes fully recyclable or fully compostable?
The way that we've tried to look at this problem is, how do we make the biggest impact on the problem we're trying to solve and be very objective and academically rigorous about when we study that problem? How do we go about doing that? So in some cases, the answer would be, let's use a natural product that biodegrades. In some cases, though, as I was describing earlier, the most amazing impact we can have is to suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and then lock it into the product. And a great example of that I've alluded to today is on our sugarcane-based soles. I'll just walk you through it quickly to give you a perspective, but you're driving a car on the road in Brazil and you're spewing emissions out of your tailpipe. And sugarcane in the very far south of Brazil takes that carbon dioxide and with just photons from the sun and a little rainfall, grows it into sugarcane. That sugarcane is processed and it makes your table sugar that you use for a Coca-Cola or whatever. And the waste product of that, you need to throw it out. Instead of throwing out that waste product, we have it go through a number of chemical processes that eventually turns into these little pellets that we melt down and make our soles for our shoes out of. And that process is so good because it locks that carbon from the tailpipe of the car right into the bottom of our shoe, and then it locks it there for a while. So it's taking these terrible brown molecules with greenhouse warming potential, and it strips it out of the atmosphere and locks it away in a form that won't penetrate. And if that biodegraded, it would release it back if it wasn't in a proper disposal facility. So it's kind of this nuanced topic, and something that we deal with is the tension of what's the right thing to do and what sounds like the right thing to do. And we always try to err on the side of, let's do the right thing, no matter how good or bad it sounds. And so that's how we make our choices.
When you think of all birds, we think of a brand that has a lot of personality, has a lot of very unique aspects and attributes to it. So when you went about building the brand of all birds, what were you considering and how do you build a brand for a company?
I think a brand, sometimes people mix the idea of a brand with a simple idea of a logo. And what a brand is really, it's an embodiment of a company. When you're making something like us and you're selling to consumers, it really needs to embody who you are as a company. And often I think, and in particular these days, it needs to embody who you are as people. And we wanted to have something that was true to what we wanted to build. We wanted to build a brand that stood for something really important, that we were building something that was contributing to society by combating climate change. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you can't be out there preaching people about climate change if you're trying to sell shoes. Like, it's got to be fun. And Tim and I think, you know, we run the company as co-CEOs. And I think the bedrock of our partnership is around a sense of mutual respect and kind of low ego. And that humility, we like to think, bleeds into the brand, and that we really want to have a brand that is both doing something important, but also can maintain its irreverence and fun and sense of humor about itself. And so we really thought about that and wrote it all down. We wrote all this stuff down, and then we tried to create a brand that had these attributes that we believed were both important, but also would attract people to want to be a part of this community that we're trying to build. And this community of like-minded individuals that don't want to sacrifice performance for the environment or comfort for the environment. And so we went through a lengthy process and brought incredible creative minds together in order to really come up with something that was all of those attributes, and then come up with a way to describe and tell that story in a really concise way that then breaks through the noise, because you know how much noise there is. And today you're flicking through your phone. You have about half a second of attention that you can give to anything that pops onto your screen. So how do you break through all that noise and all this information? You do it with a really clear message. So that's not an easy thing to pull off. And I think that's something we work hard on every day to keep doing. And every time we make decisions, we fall back on the three values we have as a brand and our mission to make better things in a better way and helpful in guiding us in making the tough brand decisions.
See, are you focused on a certain market or demographic when you started?
I think we always had a person in mind. And when I say a person, really like kind of like the construct of a person, not an individual. And it's not about a demographic. For us, it was always about a way of being. And the most important thing for us was like people who are adventurous, people who aspired to be creative, who love the intersection of being working on the go and maybe even working out and having a health and wellness mindset. And having that health and wellness mindset drove us to understand what kind of products those people would like, what kind of versatility that those customers would require from our products, what kind of challenges they would put us up against. If we're going to make a shoe, the best shoe to go traveling and walk through some cool city you're going to in Europe, how are you going to go in Europe and walk around 12 miles and see all the sights, get it on an airplane and only pack one shoe in your bag? What is that shoe? And so we really built towards that kind of mindset of a person. And I think we've done a great job of capturing that group of people. And what happens, just given that we only sell directly to consumers. We don't sell through retail stores, except our own retail stores. Like we don't sell through big department stores or things like that. That we end up finding people that tend to be younger, and they tend to meet that mindset, but they read different publications. They're on social media. They're on things that we're on. So I think we find each other that way, and we tend to err towards a much younger group of people because of that. But we like the people that are young of mind, agnostic of their age, and that's who we've really found. And by the way, we're a really global company. So we're here talking in the US, but we sell in 35 countries now. We have retail stores in Europe, in North America, and in Asia. And we sell to a whole bunch of different consumers who are at different points in the journey on thinking about what sustainability means to them and what they're demanding from consumer products. And so it's all these unique challenges for us to make all the product and the messaging work on a global basis. And that's something that we work at every day. And it's real challenging and keeps it really fun.
Interesting. This is a very, very big problem in sustainability. And shoes is really like a drop in this much larger bucket of global climate change and degradation. Why shoes? And what message do you want to help inspire through all this?
It's such a good question. You know, when people buy particularly items in the fashion industry, I'll use that term really loosely. We don't really think of ourselves as a fashion company, but we certainly are driven with style in mind. It's an emotional purchase. And if we could be a storyteller and a beacon for what it means to make a consumer product that is good for the world and good for the consumer, and you don't have to sacrifice on anything, price, performance, whatever, quality, that we can show a path that's what consumers want. Other industry people in the footwear industry will follow, and other industries will follow also. And I think there's a whole ecosystem needs to exist. And to change these big brands that have been around for 50 years that have said, if it's an athletic company, we make you run faster or jump higher. If it's, you name your product, if it's a mattress that makes you sleep easier and a toothbrush that makes your teeth cleaner. Whatever these issues are, if we can show a path that says there really is a way to make a company more like a tree than it is a company, or more like a tree than a consumer product that you think of extracting from the earth, we are going to get so many followers coming after our business opportunity, because that's the nature of capitalism and it's healthy, that we will show the way and people will copy us. We will show the way and people will try to replicate and transport our model into a different industry. And that is something that I would be incredibly proud to be part of that movement. And if that's the impact that we can make, we're going to change whole ecosystems. And it's going to go all the way back to the Solazimes of the world, the companies that are innovating on technology that are having a hard time finding customers right now. And there still are. And we find that today, you know, sometimes people ask me, do I think it's hard as we get bigger as a company to maintain our values and not sacrifice things for the environment? And maybe it's counterintuitive, but for us, it's gotten so much easier. Every day we get bigger, we can ask more of our factories, we can ask more of our R&D partners, and we get people coming to us with amazing ideas. And it used to be us going hunting down. When we first did the sugarcane shoe, we had to fly down to Brazil, mock up a Wall Street Journal article that said how cool this project was going to be in the end, and convince these guys to invest millions of dollars to take sugarcane and turn it into a foam that's the most ubiquitous foam in all of footwear. It's called EVA, and make it out of a renewable product. Now people are coming to us and doing this. And if we can start to show that there's an ecosystem and that there's a palette of materials, a library of materials that can be used, not just in footwear, but in everywhere, that's going to be amazing. We're going to enable lots of entrepreneurs, like the people that are listening in on this, I hope, and lots of big companies. And it's going to get more competitive for us. So we got to keep innovating and our heads down. And that's all we focus on. It's like innovate, get our carbon count down, and get our innovation up and get the consumer experience to be great. And if we can do that, the world's going to be awesome. It's a much better place. And we'll play a role, even though fashion only contributes 7% of global emissions and the footwear industry is 700 million metric tons of carbon dioxide emission each year. It is a drop in the bucket when you think of the big players, the oil and gases and everything, but it is an emotional and it has the power to be the tip of the spear that consumers think about that pulls everyone else along. That's my hope.
And as consumers, how can we take our stand in that mission? What kind of products in other product categories can we look to?
You know, look, it's hard because sustainability, it's a word that means 10 different things to 10 different people. And you ask those 10 people, do they want to be sustainable? Of course they do. When they go to make a purchase at a store, do they think about it when they're opening up their wallets? Typically not. And part of the challenge is that there's a lack of information to educate consumers on what is good. If you look at the back of a drink and it says the amount of calories and the amount of sugar in there, how much added sugar, you know what you're getting. When you do that on a piece of apparel, a shirt or a shoe, you don't get that information. So one of the things we've tried to do is translate the most important aspects of our vision of fixing climate change and giving people an opportunity to make a choice based on that. We have labeled our products with a carbon number. So how much carbon is emitted? Carbon equivalent emissions are emitted in the process of manufacturing and distributing this product. Now you get to choose just like you do on price, style, quality, calories, if it's food or whatever else you're looking for on the back of a food label, you have the information. So first of all, what you should absolutely do is go to allbirds.com and buy our stuff. Secondly, you should demand of other companies that you're looking for their products. You should ask them what their sustainability creds are and look for the information. Do the homework. And if brands align with your values on and you care about this issue, put your money behind it and vote with your wallet. And I think it's really important. And I think we're seeing it happen a lot. We're proud of that. I think every time now somebody buys a product with us, we send you an email after and we give you the opportunity to select or inform us where you would like our carbon offsets to go. So even though we label our carbon pollution that we make as a company, we then take the opportunity to offset that down to zero by financing projects that suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, prevent it from escaping. And so we pay for our pollution. And that's something we just believe from a public policy perspective, the whole world should do. So we've done it to ourselves, kind of a self-imposed carbon tax. So we give you an opportunity to inform us. And so we try to drive it home to our consumers who are buying products that you do have a choice and there is a better way. And we hope that kind of catches on.
I feel very, very few companies are self-imposing the carbon tax. And that's really an extraordinary step in this direction. Who was the first celebrity that started to endorse Allbirds?
You know, we've gotten really fortunate. We don't have like an endorsement program or anything like that. It's not really been how we've grown up. We just got lucky and a bunch of really cool people were wearing our products and it's ranged the gamut. You know, you mentioned Leonardo DiCaprio. That's a special one because he's given over $100 million to environmental awareness and raising environmental awareness and causes fighting climate change. And he didn't even know that we were doing work that was positive for the environment. He just found the shoes. Then he found out about our values. And then we started having a conversation and he ended up investing in our business, which was pretty cool. You know, people like Emma Watson, we've got Matthew McConaughey is a fun one too. And then it goes into even the sphere of politics. You know, Barack Obama has worn it and was just seen wearing it this week. Doesn't get old to people like Oprah Winfrey and just a whole host of people across the sphere of entertainment. And part of it also, like we make a product that is is versatile, it's informal, it's for this creative class of people. And so I think it fits well there with their lifestyle. And so it was kind of a natural fit, but all those are pretty fun. And I will tell you, it's humbling every time. Biggest one for my partner, Tim Brown, is Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, is a big fan. And there's a big meeting, I forget what they call it, it's like the meeting across the Tasman, where Prime Minister of Australia meets the Prime Minister of New Zealand every time there's a change in leadership. And she gave a gift of Allbirds, which was pretty cool. And so some pretty special moments for us and just super humbling being just a five-year-old company. But I think it's, again, it's people paying us back for trying to build something that does something good for the world, which is really, it feels nice to be rewarded.
What inspires you about today's young people?
That is a great question. I think the thing that's been surprising to me in the last 5 years, let's say, and 5 years is convenient because we started Allbirds 5 years ago, is that young people we are finding care so much more about companies doing something more than just making money or even just being cool. It's not cool to just be cool anymore. It's cool to be cool, but you also need to do something positive for the world. And what we find with younger people in particular is that there's a base level of expectation that companies today make sure they treat employees well, they treat their supply chain well. So anyone that's in the factories that make their products are paid a living wage and are treated very fairly and work in great conditions, and that you're providing an economic livelihood that's not just meaningful financially, but also positive from all the health and safety benefits that we get, that you dispose of your chemicals properly, and that you think about the environment. And that's amazing. Because if you think about it, that's not something that's happened in the last, say, 40 years. People have accepted the idea that business is there to make profit, and that shareholders invest in business, and business is supposed to give them back as much money as they can, full stop. And that's changing. And it's pretty exciting in my view that, you know, sadly, I think there's a lot deficit of leadership in some other areas of the world in various forms in government and other aspects. And so people are maybe by default looking for business to step in and fill a bit of a void, but business is filling the void. And I think the fact that young people are holding businesses to account is truly exciting to me. And I think it's going to pave a way for a new generation of brands and a new generation of companies that contribute societally much more than we've seen in the last good number of decades. And that's all because I think of the movement that's happening within people from your generation.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Make sure to check out styleshall.org and see what they're doing and support, or at least spread the word if possible. And all the best. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure to check out more content and subscribe to our podcast.